I'm really simple. So as an engineer, a numbers guy, tell me, why do math equations always come up with a consistent answer?
Because they're always constant in this universe.
There are. That's right. There's constants. But what makes them constant?
Laws of physics and math.
Laws of physics. All right. But who wrote those laws?
Well, man did.
We think that we identified the correct formula. We experimented enough times and we concluded that's the law. Fair enough, but that still doesn't tell me why we have consistent outcomes.
We actually don't have consistent outcomes, and math is logical in a sense that we can attribute or account for certain, but it doesn't mean that we have definitive proof of something that we cannot measure or account for. In other words, X is only X. And none of the variables in our world is actually a constant. Things are always continuously changing, not to mention evolution. And in evolution, we have micromutations. These are differences in code that change within our genetic system that we can't explain for, we can't account for, we can't logically produce any math to make this a constant. It is in our genes that what happens is a small, minimal change in our DNA, in our genome, goes on to the next generation, the next generation, the next generation. By the time it hits the fourth generation, we can then see a little change or subtlety of this micromutation. It could be something very simple, a speck in the eye, or it could even be a whole eye color change. It could even be hair color or something as simple as a mole or a freckle that gets carried down. For instance, I have a similar one that my dad has on the side of my cheek. Like, it's just how it happens. But it doesn't account for a consistency, and it doesn't account for anything that logically then goes to explain something we can't actually measure or test. This clip I'm presenting to you was posted in 2018. It's called Math Proves That God Exists, and has 266,000 views. And I haven't heard any math, and I don't think there's any math in this video if I recall, but it's a 6-minute video. I'm going to go through most of it, and we're going to see where the math is that proves God exists. Either that or it's just a very poorly worded title.
Here's my premise, that if there is not a bigger constant in the universe, there's no constants in math or in science. Because if we are random nothing, you know, we kind of came together over billions of years and sort of got our act together and became moral, started walking upright, developed eyes, nose, ears, mouth, taste, all of that. We kind of evolved that way. There wouldn't be any constants. We would never have anything that was certain because it's all random according to evolution. Fair enough?
You couldn't have something random and then say we got here by, you know, any other method, and that it was just chaos and evolution, because that's not exactly what it was. But we can prove different species and different things of different kinds, and it didn't happen by chance or luck either. It had to do with how genes reacted, how molecules reacted, how everything reacted to its environment. So there is a system to it, it just isn't a constant. For instance, the evolution of the eye was not a constant. It actually developed based on its environment through photoperiodism and daily synchronization of circadian rhythms. They are insufficient for vision as they cannot distinguish shapes or determine the direction light is coming from. Eye spots are found in nearly all major animal groups and are common among unicellular organisms, including euglena. The euglena's eye spot, called a stigma, is located at its interior end. It is a small splotch of red pigment which shades a collection of light-sensitive crystals. Together with the leading flagellum, the eye spot allows the organism to move in response to light, often toward the light, to assist in photosynthesis. And to predict day and night, the primary function of circadian rhythms, visual pigments are located in the brains of more complex organisms and are thought to have a role in synchronizing spawning with lunar cycles. By detecting the subtle changes in nighttime illumination, organisms could synchronize the release of sperm and eggs to maximize the probability of fertilization. And the basic light processing unit of eyes in the photoreceptor cell is a specialized cell containing two types of molecules in a membrane. The opsin, a light-sensitive protein surrounding the chromophore, a pigment that distinguishes colors. Groups of such cells are termed eye spots and have evolved independently somewhere between 40 and 65 times. These eye spots permit animals to gain only a very basic sense of the direction and intensity of light, but not enough to discriminate an object from its surroundings. Developing an optical system that can discriminate the direction of light to within a few degrees is apparently much more difficult, and only 6 of the 30-some phyla poses such a system. However, these phyla account for 96% of the living species. This was taken from Wikipedia. This is very simple, easy access information, and you can learn all about the evolution of the eye and how it got to even where we are today and why animals have more advanced ones than we do, and so on. So there is no constant. Otherwise, everything in creation would have the best eyes and the best this, and that's because why would you create something with so many flaws? Now, that means that science is overcoming fallacious or even believed probability. And so math so far has not proven anything a constant, nor has it led to a creator. It's actually proven everything not a constant.
Microevolution. What's the difference between micro and macro?
Macro is that we are descendants essentially from fish, and we actually grew, the fish grew legs, then we evolved into humans.
Macroevolution encompasses the grandest trends and transformations in evolution, such as the origin of mammals and the radiation of flowering plants. Macroevolutionary patterns are generally what we see when we look at the large scale of history of life. It is not necessarily easy to see macroevolutionary history. There are no firsthand accounts to be read. Instead, we reconstruct the history of life using all available evidence, geology, fossils, and living organisms. Once we figured out what evolutionary events have taken place, we try to figure out how they happened. Just as in microevolution, basic evolutionary mechanisms like mutation, migration, genetic drift, and natural selection are at work and can help explain many large-scale patterns in the history of life. The basic evolutionary mechanisms, mutation, migration, genetic drift, and natural selection, can produce major evolutionary change if given enough time. That means that mutation, gene flow, genetic drift, and natural selection plus 3.8 billion years equals macroevolution. This can be found on evolution.berkeley.edu in the Evo Library article Evo 48. So what's the evidence for microevolution? Speciation, commonly known as macroevolution, is supported by several lines of evidence, including direct observation, genetic mapping, and the fossil record. Several populations have been observed in the act of splitting into new species. That is microevolution. That also can be found on the Berkeley site.
Anymore.
And why did we decide to do all of those things? And what was the mechanism that kicked that process and guided that process so we could grow teeth, have a digestive system, develop something called peristalsis, which is what moves the food down to your gut, the acid to deteriorate it, the ability to pull out the vitamins that you need, plus process it through a plumbing system. Mm-hmm. When did all of those things take place, and who decided that's the way we should be?
Something you don't seem to understand is that we don't decide these things, and nothing in our genetics decided anything. It doesn't think, it doesn't have a brain, it doesn't process these things. It's environmental influence. If it has a dominant trait or a dominant characteristic to it in some way that overpowers the other ones, that's how it becomes influenced into our genetic genome. It has nothing to do with decisions. It had nothing to do with, what traits do we like more? Do we like this one? Is this one better? There was no outside influence to determine our results of how we got to where we are today. The fact that we got here was due to millions of years of evolution and time. It was time that got us here, and there's likely other planets that might be in the same position and may not be. But looking at the spectrum of evidence of how many thousands and julians of years the universe has existed or could have existed, and we also know the universe may have always existed, it's possible that we are the only ones existing at this point in time on this planet. Doesn't mean that anything else wasn't possible or didn't happen. It just means we are here now.
The code in our DNA changed. All right. Codes in DNA can be manipulated these days and changed.
Notice that you said can be manipulated and changed. Today, we can do this. We can manipulate the genomes and DNA today. The reason for this is because man has developed the ability to do so. That would disprove a creator. Because if we can do what he does, then aren't we all gods?
And different people have DNA, but no new information gets added to DNA. You can detract information, but you can't add information to DNA. See, what I'm trying to get at is it's a little suspicious that all of these things happened all by themselves without anything to guide them or to think them through. Okay, so for instance, let's say you had your teeth, you had your throat, you've evolved all of that, you've got peristalsis working its way down, but you haven't evolved your stomach yet. What would happen to your teeth and to your throat?
I would not know.
They'd go away because you don't need them for anything. You had to happen all at the same time. It's called irreducible complexity. You're so complex that if we reduced a component of it, none of the other components would exist because they need each other to function.
Irreducible complexity is a pseudoscientific argument that certain biological systems cannot evolve by successive small modifications to pre-existing functional systems through natural selection. Central to the creationist concept of intelligent design, IC is rejected by the scientific community, which regards intelligent design as pseudoscience. This means that any process or thereof would not be conducive to how we developed or how we got here. That means that even though we didn't have one system, there was a system there still present. It just happened to evolve and change into a different system. We have a pancreas, which we don't need anymore because we learned to cook our meats. We are the only animal or species in this world that does such. No other animal does. Who decided that? So we are influenced by our environment. That means that anything that comes into contact with it either has to adapt, adjust, or change, or it has to, you know, kick it out. But that means it's not a dominant trait.
We know that some people that are darker skin toned and
like,
melatonin
have a more protection against sunlight. They don't get sunburnt like we do if we lack some of these pigmentations. We also know that some people up in the higher altitudes have learned to survive and adapt in those situations because they don't get the effects of being up in high altitudes. I can't remember the name at the moment. But they've learned to adapt and survive, where we would have to have extra oxygen or extra things to help us survive at those altitudes. Now, that again is a product of their environment. That is not a decision made by any one creator.
All right, I want to ask you a question about DNA. How many cells do you have in your body?
Too many to count.
About 50 million,
yeah.
Give or take.
Yes.
50 million cells. How many strands of DNA do you have?
That I do not know.
Let me put it to you this way. If we took out your DNA, first of all, we could fit it into a tablespoon, but if we typed out the code, we wrote it down, you could fill the Grand Canyon with your DNA information 40 times. Put it another way, we typed out your DNA and we took that and we tried to get it to the moon. Would it reach the moon?
I would say yes.
5 million times it would. That is a lot of organized information.
Okay, so you think that DNA is organized information. Well, it kind of is, it kind of isn't. Deoxyribonucleic acid is a molecule composed of two chains that coil around each other to form a double helix carrying the genetic instructions used in the growth, development, and functioning and reproduction of all known living organisms and many viruses. DNA and ribonucleic acid are nucleic acids alongside proteins, lipids, and complex carbohydrates. Nucleic acids are one of the four major types of macromolecules that are essential for all known forms of life. So, what's organized about it? It's not information, it's proteins, it's chemical compositions. Maybe that's why you're having such a hard time understanding how things are influenced and that's not decided on.
It's too complex to have happened all by itself. Just like the sunglasses you're wearing, you don't believe that those just happen. They evolved kind of a nose thing, and then they got darker, and then there's a sun. you go, that's not really logical. And I don't think it's logical to suggest that we happened all by ourselves.
It's actually very highly logical because we have a chemical composition where sunglasses do not. Sunglasses do not have a DNA genome that can adjust and readjust to environmental conditions. Now, what it can do is crush under a rock if that's what we put it under. That doesn't change its actual composition or anything in general. Now, because that plastic can deteriorate and become virtually invisible at some point, was that decided on, or was that a designer-created change, or did it happen to disintegrate into the molecules that it originally was? Now, that could happen over thousands or millions of years. That might be how long it takes. Much like all the trash in the ocean, how long would that take to deteriorate before we even realized it was or was not there? If it disappeared and let's say we time traveled and it disappeared and there was no trace ever of any plastics in the ocean, where did it go? Did a creator or designer or a trash compactor get rid of it? Or do we simply have no evidence that it ever existed in the first place? Now, that hurts my argument for that there is no God, as I am an atheist. However, we don't have anything to begin with. And if there was one, it should have at least existed or lasted, especially if there's a designer and creator of the universe. You'd think you would make something in the walls, in the rock, that we would have undoubtable proof that for among 4,000 different religions wouldn't even exist if it was there. Because it would be all-knowing and all-understanding and never would impact or be left to interpretation.
I think somebody made you. It's what I think. Mm-hmm. I think you're designed by your maker.
So this is where I want to interject just real quick, because no, we were not designed. That is a God of the gaps fallacy that you then go, well, we don't have evidence that he doesn't exist, so I can fill in with what I think happens and then pass it off as he does exist.
A very intelligent, powerful being who's very moral, because we see another set of constants in this universe, morality.
So now you're just jumping all over the place, because God is not moral. And if he was, then there wouldn't be verses about ownership of slaves, and that if you only beat them, you're allowed to, as long as you don't kill them within 2 days. Rapists wouldn't be able to marry their victims, and victims wouldn't have to marry their rapists for 50 shekels paid to the father. And if he was moral, he wouldn't ask you to have faith to believe in him and then prove he is true on that alone. He would actually have given you something that is irrefutable and can be tested in any which way and prove his existence. We don't have that, so therefore, that's still not moral. He also wouldn't make 10 commandments, one of them being thou shalt not kill, and then order the killing of 3,000 men. And what we realize is God never did these things. It was merely happening on behalf of him.
I asked a young man earlier, would you be willing to tell me it's always wrong to beat up a small child?
No. Yes.
Why?
Because children, for the most part, are innocent.
All right. But what if I said, I don't think they are. I like beating up small children. I think it's good to beat up small children. How can you tell me I'm wrong?
Well, morals is based on the rationality you perceive it to be. Now, it is wrong because it harms or hurts another person or interferes with their free will. That is what we base our moralities on. What God doesn't do is let us live our life the way we want to. Instead, there's a list of demands that we are to follow exactly to a T, which is impossible because there's so many that just are like thought police. And in other words, we think it, therefore we have sinned, and that's not how the world works. So it's wrong to beat a child. Children, according to the Bible, also are not innocent, as you were born into sin. So how do you refute that one?
Well, that could be that religion has kind of written some of those things down. But if there is not a moral constant behind them, then it's just one set of people telling another people what to think.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Funny how you can actually say what it is and then say that's not what it is. Yeah, you nailed it. That is exactly what religion does. That's what the Bible does. It's a bunch of people that sat around 2,000 years ago that said, hey, everybody should be doing this because we said so. Probably while drinking some wine or having some shrooms or manna, as it's called.
So I think the moral constant in this universe is God himself.
Once again, you haven't proven anything, and the only thing you have proven is that we are influenced by our environment and other genomes and other molecules and proteins and all sorts of stuff. You have not actually proven that God intervenes at all. Therefore, God cannot be a constant unless he's a constant figment of everybody's imagination. Therefore, he can be anything that anybody wants him to be, which is what interpretation is and what we have been left with when we have the Bible. Unfortunately, no one has been able to prove anything in it to a substantiated amount that anyone can fully agree, yes, this definitely 100% leads to a murder of Christ, to a God that created the universe, and to Jonah and a Jonah and a whale and Noah and a flood, etc.
And so on. That's why we know that it is wrong to beat up small children, to punch somebody in the face. We know that's wrong, but the reason we even know about the concepts of right or wrong is because God is the standard of right and wrong.
I suggest you actually read your Bible. God is not the standard of right and wrong. He is the standard of doing everything that I say, and then I will do the opposite. It is the epitome of hypocrisy, and you have no idea what morality even is if you think it comes from God. To rely on a being up in the sky, to rely on a book that was made 2,000 years ago as to the morality of how we are supposed to live now has nothing to do with what we actually know in existence today, or how we know that punching a child is wrong, or beating a child is wrong, or how we know that if we do something, it's wrong in general. Actually, everything has an equal or opposite reaction, right? So we know based off that that is what it determines right or wrong. I mean, realistically, one of the favorite quotes of a paper that I did, it was a long paper on the Joker. Okay, this was from my psychology studies. One of the things out of The Killing Joke, which is a comic book and now a movie, I know a lot of people don't really favor this movie, but I do because of how well they did with the psychological aspects of almost everything. It's not accurate to a T, but it's very good. I mean, for people that don't really know, it's really good and it's really accurate. Anyways, the Joker comes out and says, "We are not bound to any contract of how we behave. There's nothing that forces us basically to behave this way." Now, I'm paraphrasing, but it makes sense, right? There is nothing that keeps us from doing a bad thing. There's no actual contract that says we will not be able to do a bad thing because this contract says so, and if we even physically try, it won't even happen. You ever watch Angel or Buffy? The vampires can't go into homes that are occupied. You know, they have souls living there or whatever. So there's literally a force field that keeps them from going through the door. There's nothing that has that for us. That's not how the world works. So therefore, God can't be in control of everything. He can't be the one that caused everything or designed anything. He isn't the object of morality. He isn't the authority of it. You had it right earlier. It's a bunch of men sitting around telling other people how to live. And that's the end of the show for today. Thank you for listening. I hope you have enjoyed the content that I have provided. If you feel like supporting this podcast, you can go to anchor.fm and show your contributions, or you can go to my new Facebook page at The Adam Paradox and click on the app button that will also take you to that page. If there is content that you want to hear or things you want to know more about, let me know so I can add them to the show. Also, drop a line and I will try to get you on the show if you'd like to have a one-on-one conversation with me. I am still trying to work that out technically and figuring out when that'll happen. But most of my shows are impromptu, and I just try to do some quick Google searches. And I also look up some things on EBSCOhost, which is where I find all my peer-reviewed articles and other sources that corroborate what I'm talking about. Now, I'm not always perfect. I'm not always right. So if I get anything wrong, I'm always more than willing to correct it. However, it has to be substantiated with other evidence that is reasonable and not just take it on what is said or claimed or whatever to be. I try to have at least the most best information that I know of at the moment to provide. So head on over to The Adam Paradox on Facebook, and I will catch you again on Friday.